Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to be getting into a conversation, around the business. I'm going to call it the business of Microsoft, but also the business of software implementation as well, and just getting a sense of what's going on in that space with the team from Braintree. They are a company that specializes in Microsoft implementations. That's the way I understand it. And we are joined by Heath Huxtable. He is the MD of Braintree, and we're just going to get a sense of what's going on out there in the world of implementation, and also at the same time getting a sense of how business is going in the world of Braintree. Greetings to you, Heath.
Hello, Madiba. How are you doing? Thank you very much for the opportunity to be on your podcast. I really appreciate it.
All right, cool. So, starting off point, you heard me saying that my understanding of Braintree is that it is a Microsoft implementer or a firm that specializes in Microsoft implementations. That's the way I understand it. But maybe you could, flesh it out and add a little bit more meat to that for us.
So my daughter's kind of asking me regularly, like what do you do? How do you go about it? Try and give them a 1,000-foot view of kind of exactly what we do. But essentially, we are a business systems optimizer. We take technology, and we match technology to customer requirements or business needs. We chose, we've been doing this for quite a long time, but we chose many years ago that if you're going to do that and you need to choose a technology stack, really what you should be doing is choose a technology stack that's fit for purpose. We chose Microsoft as our vendor, our technology of choice, because there are so many choices out there. There's so many different technologies. There's so many vendors out there. I think if you're going to do justice to anything, you need to back a horse. And I think that's exactly what we did. So we are Microsoft through and through. Pretty much everything we do around Microsoft, from business applications through to productivity, through to cloud technology, all of that, and now hardware, even the hardware that we deploy, everything is actually centered around that Microsoft technology stack, is basically unlocking the value that Microsoft brings to market.
All right, great. Now, Heath, one of the things that I'm quite curious to understand, my understanding when it comes to the software providers, especially the large software providers around the world, is that they tend to work through their partner networks. You can make the software, but you need people on the other side that are going to actually implement it for you. A lot of the time, the software providers are not the implementers. They are not the ones, some companies will have an internal team that will, do an implementation for themselves and anything that they're running, whereas others, and in most cases, it's third-party providers, such as yourselves, that are going in, your specialists, and you understand how it's working, you understand the specific customer and how, Microsoft software is going to actually feed into, whatever it is that they're trying to do. Maybe it's, customer relationship management, HR, accounting, whatever it is. But my question is, with Microsoft specifically, right, did you choose Microsoft to go exclusively Microsoft out of choice, or did you find yourself there? And I ask that because you often see a number of firms saying that, we have, certification or licensing from, let's say, Microsoft, Cisco, and Amazon, for example, but you guys have decided to, be exclusively Microsoft. Why?
So, a good question. And I think we have to go back a couple of years. And, one of our entry points in the market, I would say, is I'm focusing on, we're not an enterprise organization, so we would not typically go for the top 10 of the JSE or the top 100 of the JSE ordinarily. What we would do is we'd focus on a tier below that. So we call it kind of the mid-market. So it's kind of the SMB, SMC, and the classic mid-market. And when you look in that customer demographic, what you're looking for is you're looking for solutions that are purposely built for that type of, you know, that type of size of customer. It's not to say that the solutions that we have aren't necessarily enterprise grade product, okay? But on the whole, the products that we've chosen, and hence the vendor that we backed, provides a really nice set of solutions, technology, products that fit that customer sizes so perfectly, whether it be pricing, whether it be functionality, whether it be ease of implementation, whether it be support afterwards. You know, we've done quite a lot of fairly chunky projects, fairly large projects up into Africa. And, you know, our competing products are the enterprise grade products, okay? Your tier one business applications. And we tend to win because, number one, cost per transaction is significantly lower, okay, and it's significantly lower, so which makes the sale of the solution a whole lot easier. But number two is supportability, is because Microsoft have 16,000 partners in Africa alone, okay, there's a breadth of skill that can be tapped into. Obviously, you've got to choose the right part. You've got to make sure the right part has got the right certifications and all of that. But there's an opportunity to tap into a market that is fairly extensive. And I think from a partner network, probably one of the largest in that space, probably one of the largest partner networks around. So for us, it's great because I think it's a compete. We compete heavily with a lot of organizations, a lot of partners out there. So we've got to make sure that we're always on our A game. But more importantly is that the extensibility of the solution around the different partners, partner sizes is immense. And for me, that's such a value add. And from a customer, when you de-risking skills availability, having access to a partner network of that size makes a whole lot more sense.
All right. I think it makes sense the way that you've put it across. And I guess one of the big questions then is to say, for a person that gets into this type of implementation, how well can they do? And I guess the question I'm asking is, how well has Braintree done in that particular space? How has the business grown over the years?
So the business has morphed over the last 10 years, and I would say, and significantly morphed over the last 10 years. A lot of that's driven by the cloud drive, by the big vendors. But a lot of it's also about, you know, being able to kind of take advantage of our stakeholders, our shareholders, and what they ultimately wanted to try and achieve from the business. So 10 years ago, we were a organization that was essentially a 20-man operation. We've grown in a 20-man operation, and we were 100% focused on business application deployment on a project level. Okay, so what would happen is you would start a project, and the project would last, let's say, 8, 9, 10 months or whatever it is. And as you get to the end of that, you're already starting to look for the next project that you need to put that team onto when the project comes to, when the project that you're currently busy with comes to an end. So we'd go from project to project, we typically used to classify ourselves as a feast or famine business. You know, while the projects are in progress and you've got the projects, you're doing particularly well, but in the midst between projects, you've got this famine. So what cloud has done for us is it's actually been able to kind of drive a different agenda and more of a smoothing of the revenue curve. Okay, so while we are still very principally project driven, 10 years ago we were 100% project driven. Move on 10 years now, and we're now 55% project driven. Okay, and 45% is basically cloud services. Okay, so what we're able to do is de-risk the revenue curve by adding in a smooth set of income. So in other words, we're not fighting, you know, every time we come to project closure to make sure we sign the next deal. Okay. And that for us has been a major shift from an organizational point of view and from a culture point of view, because we're now not having that constant driver, that almost built in fear that you've got to make sure that you've got a pipeline and that you're closing one project and starting the next. So for us, it's been a big shift. And the net result of what that's done for us is we've moved from a 20-man operation 10 years ago to where we are right now as a 160-man operation or 160-person operation. And that to me is ideal. And every single person in our organization was picked for a specific purpose. We know exactly what the objective is. We know what the outcome is. We know what value they provide to us as an organization and consequently to our customers. So from an opportunity point of view, being a Microsoft partner, as an example, I think is a massive opportunity to organizations out there. And being a Microsoft partner that is so in tune with and adopts technology shifts and technology changes as quickly as we should be, makes it so much better. You know, I always used to think to myself, you know, growing up, I was always, you know, we were always in the tech space. Okay. And, you know, they used to call it the bleeding edge. All right, is technology comes out and before it's, you know, properly tried and tested, you're already kind of wanting to deploy it and make sure that you're getting some ROI out of it. That's the innate nature of who we are. We are a tech-based organization, so we're always wanting to kind of try the next best thing. And the next best thing actually is also a beautiful thing for our customers, because what it allows us to do is actually deliver different services and state-of-the-art, you know, leading-edge services to organizations out there that actually want to make a difference in their space.
All right. And in terms of earnings, what has that done over the 10-year period?
So, as I said, 10 years ago, 20-man operation, we were a 30 million rand business. And our financial year end was ended August this year. And we hit the half a billion rand operation in a 10-year space. So, you know, a massive, massive driver for us. And again, you know, 55% of that is project services, business applications, consultative services. The rest is, you know, licensing, cloud provision.
No, that's actually an incredible rate of growth. 10 years, it sounds like a long time, but it actually can, feel like a snap of a finger. And that's an impressive rate of growth, over time. Out of curiosity, you know, how does a business of your nature in South Africa compared to maybe similar types of businesses in other jurisdictions? I guess I'm just trying to get a sense of people that are providing
relative size.
Yeah, relative size. Yeah.
So as I said to you, with 16,000 partners inside on the African continent, in South Africa, active partners, there are, I think the last count was 4,500 or 5,000 partners in South Africa. What we've done is the thing is that, you know, I can't get the stats necessarily from Microsoft directly, but based on the interactions that we have with Microsoft and the involvements that we have with their executives around pipeline management, all of that, I think we are probably in the top, I would say, 10 to 15 partners in the country.
That's actually a good one. And out of that split, because I like the split that you gave earlier on around project-based work versus, you know, the cloud services that are now coming in, I would assume that the cloud services piece is giving you guys an annuity type of, revenue that helps to smooth out the revenue curve that you were talking about earlier on.
Exactly, 100%. So, when we got involved with our current stakeholders and shareholders 10 years ago, as I said, we were 100% project services. It was a very unattractive business to acquire at that particular point in time, because Number there's the, you know, there's a couple of anomalies. Is one is project services, so you have this feast or famine. The other one is that you're dealing with people, okay, and employees, and how do we guarantee that we retain skill? And number three is we've got customers who have a choice. They've got 5,000 other partners that they can choose. So how does an organization that goes and acquires a company based on project services ensure that there's an effective return on that investment? The way we did that, and again, thanks to the technology that we're in right now, is an annuity business. So we de-risk the business by making sure that a big chunk of our revenue actually is driven through license services and cloud or consumption services. Our target, anyway, over the next 4 years, is that we want to go, we want to actually bump it up a bit more. We need 35% of our revenue to come from project services and 65% to come from annuity. What that does for us is it actually de-risks the consulting and project services business completely. So, and I'll give you another very, really good example. When COVID happened, okay, if we were a projects-only business, we would not be around today during COVID, because during COVID, all projects were halted. We had people sitting on the bench for months at a time. Okay. If we were a project only business, we would not be around today. What happened was we were able to fund our business through the annuity part. And the net result of that was that we didn't let go one person during COVID. Okay. So for us, the ability to be able to de-risk that consulting part of the business and make sure that we can focus on quality delivery, okay, without the risk of, kind of selling your soul, that to us is absolutely what's critical. And that's what the annuity part of the business has actually done for us.
All right, cool. You know, it's talking to you is helping to answer a lot of questions that I've often had about businesses such as yours. What I appreciate is your candor in terms of actually, highlighting how the business actually works and the market dynamics, because we often talk to people in your position, and sometimes some of that detail doesn't always carry through. One of the other interesting pieces for me is that Braintree is associated with Vox, right? And associated with Vox. And we've actually had Jacques Dutoy a couple of times on this specific platform. Yes. And now I'm wondering when, Jacques or, someone else at Vox is talking about, we have a relationship with Microsoft and we can do those types of things. I'm guessing that it's a business such as yours that helps to make, all of those things happen, or one of the conduits through which a big organization like that is able to make that happen.
So December last year, we were a subsidiary of Vox. We've now, and the group is basically unbundled. And so while we are owned by the same shareholders, there's no, we're not a subsidiary of Vox anymore. But to your point, what we did for Vox was, offer them a service that they weren't able to provide to their customers, prior to engagement with Braintree. We are heavily involved in sales process around Microsoft technology stack in their customer base. They take us in on pretty much all the deals that they do. We help them with the sales process. We help them with the technology choice. We help them with the contractual side of what it is that needs to be done in terms of a project or project type services, and it's been a very, very fruitful exercise for us having an organization like Vox a part of our sales process and a part of our success.
Okay, I think that makes sense, and I like the at least now I've learned something in terms of, the structure of the business and the association where things are actually standing now. And in light of that, one of the things that I am most curious about. I've been curious about what makes a business choose a specific vendor. I think we spoke about that. Curious about, I guess, the nature of revenue streams. We spoke about that. But for me, the success factor feels like the most, what's the word I'm looking for? The hardest part to predict, right? What success in the business that you're in, is it a matter of technical ability as a firm, or is it a matter of relationships? Because technical ability can be pretty much standardized as long as you've got certification. Technical ability might be more or less the same. Does it come down to relationships? Is there like a special source somewhere? Like what?
I'm a relationship person at heart. So for us, and it's one of the things I've been at pains to try and kind of make sure that we as an organization going from a 20-man operation to 160 person operation, sorry, is how do we maintain that interpersonal relationship that we've got with each individual? And it becomes very difficult when you the larger you get. But I think the secret has to be and will always be the relationships. It's about people. It's about trust. I mean, I think that one of the things that we that you know I'll give you another very good example is in an organization that does project services. Okay, you're only as good as the last project you completed. Okay, so if that project was a failure, that is what you're going to be taking into the next project you start with. So for us, project failure is not an option. And what that means for us is that we deliver at all cost. Okay, what we promise, we deliver. And that to me, that almost embodies the type of relationship that we want to kind of foster with not only the people that work with us, but the customers that we're going to be doing the implementation for. So there's a level of trust that I think we garner through that relationship. I mentioned, we'd been part of the Vox Group for the last 10 years. But prior to that, we were three independent organizations that were pretty much doing the same sort of thing. Okay. And we kind of we the acquisition was done and the three companies folded into one to form Braintree. But what's interesting is that we have customers from those three individual business entities that have been with us for over 20 years. And that talks to relationship more than anything else. Technology, Madiba, I 100% agree with you, is that when we employ for attitude, not necessarily technical ability. Okay, because you can't change somebody's core, but you can train them and teach them on everything that's needed in the tech space. And we have to be doing that because the tech changes so regularly. We're in a constant learning curve. So we have to be able to have the person that one wants to challenge themselves, one wants to make sure that they take that bleeding edge, okay? But importantly, is also able to translate that into a business solution for a particular requirement. So relationships for us is about our stakeholders. So it's the relationship we forge with our shareholders, it's the relationship we have with our staff, and it's the relationship that we have with every single customer that we've got. To give you another good example, and again, it becomes particularly difficult. And we're learning as we kind of go. I don't think there's one thing that we can say, was an element to success. But I mean, even our customers, we went from 90 customers 10 years ago to we're currently over 2,400 customers. To have the kind of relationship you have with 90 customers across 2,400 also becomes difficult. Okay, so how we engage and how we relate to people also changes, as the organization kind of morphs and changes and changes in size. But at our very core, is the relationship that we build and the trust that we build with our customers. I hate the analogy. I hate this, the term, the concept, trusted advisor. Okay, I don't like that. Okay, but however, I think it embodies kind of what we're trying to achieve.
No, it makes sense. You know, back in the day, I think there really needs to be more that's done, because when you're in school or in your formative years, they always tell you about networking, right? That networking is this thing and it's very important. But I think the skill around building relationships, but also creating value from those relationships, is something that is not understood or communicated very well. So one, I like the example of your business, because you are able to literally trace a line from what were three disparate businesses into one, and how the relationships from each of the entities have fed into the current business, and how over the lifetime of the entities that have now been rolled up into one, relationships have gotten the business to, you know, where it is right now, right? And I honestly think that that's an art form that needs to probably be, you know, taken a little bit more seriously and spoken about a little bit more, you know, around that. And I think that's very key. But tied to that, and you had started touching on it a little bit, as much as relationships are important and talent is, you know, more or less standardized, you still do need to compete, you know, for that talent. How's the competition for talent? We hear that it's quite a savage market out there for tech talent right now.
And again, I hate the concept dog eat dog. Okay, but the sad reality of where we are right now is that we have a tremendous skills shortage. And it's something that we have to address either collectively with other partners or with the vendors. And I mean, there are programs that are currently in place to try and upskill and mentor and put into learnership programs the kind of people that we would want or that we would need to be able to be successful in organizations like this. But what we find anyways is that and it's something that you almost have to discount in the process, okay, is we are going to spend money on training and upskilling an individual. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily have to be a physical cost out, okay? It can be the opportunity cost that you know, we're not putting a resource on a customer to be able to generate revenue until we're happy with the concept that the person can actually stand on their own two feet, which might take 2, 4, 5, 6 months before we kind of, you know, so that's pure cost with no revenue generation. That to us is more important, making sure that we get the right skill and we get the right training done. However, what happens is that same person now has a skill that is highly sought after in the market. And invariably, we end up in situations where they say to us, you know, we've got an offer from an organization and, you know, they've bumped my salary up by 40%. And this is where I'm at. In certain cases, and I'm a firm believer, you know, in that is that we're going to lose people. Okay, for me, the choice is, money is an important part, and the remuneration associated with what you do is very important. Every year we go through a process of, you know, making sure that we are market related. I want to pay a little bit above what where market is. But I think the most important thing for us is that we've got to create an environment for people to want to stay. I want people to stay here because we are Braintree and we've got an amazing culture and we're a people-centric business, okay? And the money will come automatically. But we will lose people, and we do lose people on the basis of a money-only decision. at the end of the day, we still got to make commercial sense of, you know, what's the resource, what is the resource that we've got, how much money can we generate from it? You know, if we bump a person's salary up, do we still make any money on it, on, you know, on the resource? So it's important for us to kind of, we balance that act. But what's also happening, Madiwes, is that not only in the local market, but I mean, our resources are being poached to do overseas work. So they sit in South Africa, but they get paid foreign currency. Okay. And that's something, you know, we're there, we're talking about, you know, 60, 70% increases in salary, and that becomes completely unaffordable. You just can't make commercial sense of it in a South African context. So we're losing a lot of resources to overseas companies that are effectively bringing on cheaper labor into a European or, you know, a European deployment with very little risk. Okay, so we fight constantly about staff retention. We fight constantly about upskilling and training and making sure that we've got the right people at the right time. And then obviously, you know, from a culture point of view, is create the right environment to kind of make sure we retain those people. I have found, and Angela, who heads up our HR and people team, I have found that we are starting to get a lot of people coming back now. And into market. So a lot of people that did go overseas and or worked in South Africa, worked offshore, are now deciding this is not actually where we want to go. And I'll give you a very good example is after COVID, we abandoned offices completely. And we went 100% work from home. A lot of our projects were done 100% remotely. We took a decision about a year ago, and we've kind of gone through the exercise of kind of, you know, trying to understand where we want to be. But we've gone back into hybrid office now, okay? And I think the saving grace for the South African partner network in terms of being able to retain individuals is have an office, have somewhere where people can call home, okay? Because we're missing that human interaction, we're missing cultural, you know, a cultural exchange. We're missing banter. We miss, and you know, I think we're less productive when we're in the offices. Okay, but it's so worth being in the offices, and I think that's going to pay dividends for us in being able to retain people, and also being able to make sure we don't lose people to overseas. You know, that's immigration, or you know, the work from home but operate offshore.
One of the best things that you just said, Heath, was what you said now, that you think people are going to be less productive in office, but there are certain intangibles that are being derived by being in the office. That is the most honest view I've received around this particular issue, because I think where a lot of talent is sitting, you know, and across different sectors and disciplines, is that people feel like they're being hoodwinked by employers, right? We know that we can be productive without necessarily being at our seats.
Exactly.
And as an organization, don't gaslight us into thinking that we are going to be more productive at work. Rather say, we know you can be productive elsewhere, right? I think understanding that as a truth is just a good place to be at. But then also understanding, to the earlier point, that there's certain intangibles, and I think it also feeds into what we're talking about earlier on, the networking, right? I am 100% behind remote working, but from a networking point of view, I understand that there's just something that comes with meeting a person in real life, shaking their hand, you know, going and actually seeing their work environment, a client or whoever it is, and actually being in their space, understanding what they do, you know, physically, as opposed to having, let's say, a Teams meeting. 100%. So I'm 100% with you.
You and I were talking about a little earlier on, before we started, was do we do this meeting with cameras on? Okay, and for me, again, it's the next best thing to being in person is being able to see the person. I think we've got this very bad idea that we can go into Teams or Zoom meetings and just all cameras are off. For me, body language and what you're seeing, I might not necessarily feel the energy, but I can see the energy. But when you're in person, it's a completely different kettle of fish. You get to feed on that energy. You get to feed on the emotions that are in the group. And there are a lot of people, Madiwa, out there that are struggling with the work, the work from home, the inability to be able to kind of communicate in a group of people and to have that physical interaction. So for me, it was like an absolute no-brainer. And as I say, I would rather, to give you, we're a Microsoft house. Okay. So you walk into our offices and we've got an Xbox console station sitting in reception where we would normally have, introduce a couple of people to come and visit us. That's Xbox console. I'd rather have you come and sit and have a game here. Okay. And have that interaction, because that's what's missing. That's the core of who we are, relationships.
No, I'm certainly with you there. And, over time, it's going to be very interesting to see what the current generation is able to do from a relationship building point of view, especially within the context, remote working, hybrid, and also in-person, how over time that's going to you were talking about revenue curves earlier, but if we're to talk about relational curves, how that is going to affect, relationships going forward and, for the next coming years. Where I want to end off today's discussion, Heath, is around digital transformation. That's probably, something that you're intimately involved in, helping companies to implement technologies, think about their strategies and that type of thing. Firstly, it's two things, really. First is just around just your take around, attitudes to digital transformation right now in South Africa from the clients that you're talking to. Maybe contrasting that with maybe any other territories that you guys are, perhaps consulting in or deploying your services. And then secondly, what has been the impact of the AI megatrend on your business?
So again, I also hate that concept of digital transformation. I think we've overplayed that so much, in the concept of being able to kind of drive opportunities in organizations. I think making people work smarter, better, more efficiently, and using technology as a basis for that, I think that to me is way more important than the concept of being able to have a digital transformation strategy. Okay, I think what we need to do is modernization. Is I think looking at legacy systems and then saying, okay, well, if I have a legacy system, how much of what is, like you mentioned, AI, how much of the new innovation can I adopt and implement using my legacy systems? And what you'll find is that there'll be a tipping point where you can do certain parts, but then there's something where you have to modernize your basic your basic platform to be able to take advantage of the new tech. So for me, it's about, again, we have a number of customers that are still on legacy business app, legacy ERP and CRM applications. Will we not support them? Hell no. Because that for us, that's a customer, and at some point in time may well become an opportunity. Okay. But the opportunity is going to be driven by their requirement and what they need at that particular point in time. And they will have the ROI, and we'll help, we can help them with the ROI around the choices and when they make those choices. We don't just want to push technology for the sake of pushing technology. And I think that's kind of what the digital transformation agenda has been. It's about if you're not digital, if you haven't got a digital transformation strategy, you're already left behind. I don't think that's necessarily 100% correct. I think organizations have a strategy. They wouldn't be around if they didn't. But it's about choosing the right technology at the right time for us. And I think that's where we as a partner play a large part of, add large part of value to our customers and the customer ecosystem. If you talk about the new innovations, AI specifically, you know, a year ago, well, just a little bit more than a year ago, Satya Nadella sat on stage or stood on stage and spoke about AI and the birth of AI and Copilot and all of that. The interesting thing for me was there was this assumption that, you know, because you've got an industry leader talking about a particular technology, that it's going to be adopted at scale. Okay. And we didn't see that. Okay. Me personally and us as an organization, we always, you know, come back to that legacy ERP kind of discussion. We've got to find a use case and you've got to find value to be able to deploy some sort of technology or innovation. And when it first started out, it was a discussion around what is the use case? What's the real use case? What's the value that an organization can drive? And it doesn't have to be money. It can be efficiency. It can be re-energizing staff, putting staff into different positions. There's a whole lot of different things that you can kind of do. And what we struggled with was the concept of what does that ROI look like? Okay. And the uptake or the adoption was particularly slow. What we found was everybody went out into market and basically said, listen, this is new tech. We've got to deploy it. If you're not thinking about it, you're going to be behind the curve. Okay. And they tried to do it at scale. And I think organizations that did achieve that, but not, that is more, it's more the exception than the norm. What we did was we decided to take a different view and actually start looking at divisions inside organizations. So instead of saying we have a finance team and the finance team have 60 people in the team, and we're going to deploy Copilot and AI into the finance team. We didn't do that. What we did was we took a particular workload. So it might be something like a collections process, okay? Or a customer communication or whatever, you know, a particular workload. What we did, we took a smaller team of people. So instead of a 60-man team, you're focusing on, let's say, a 5 or 6 or 7-man team. And what they would do is deploy into a 5, 6, 7-man team and get them to actually derive the value and the benefit, okay? And get them to actually sell it and upsell it into the organization. So we then don't become a salesperson. The organization becomes their own self-perpetuating salesperson. So the technology for us, I think, is critically important. I think that if a partner is not focusing on AI today, then I think we are a little bit behind. You'll be a little bit behind the curve. Not to say that you can't pick it up quite quickly, but making a business case or making it your sole business case at this point in time, I think, would be foolish. It's a complementary technology and innovation that we're going to apply to the stack that we've already got.
And maybe just as a quick follow-up to that, from what you can see, because I think you're much closer, to the actual companies that are making use of these technologies, right? For the companies that are actually using AI, what are they actually using the AI for? Is it to drive efficiency? Is it to maybe bake into a customer-facing platform or product? What are they actually doing?
Various. And I think one of the things that scares me the most is when an organization comes to us and says to us, they want to deploy AI because they want to reduce headcount. Okay. That to me is just like, whoa, we can't even start a project like that. Okay. So for me, driving efficiency is what we're seeing as a large portion of that. Being able to kind of take a little bit of the workload off an individual. So, and Microsoft phrases quite nicely, the AI platform is a co-pilot. It's not a replacement of, it's an assistant to. So it's whatever you do, but just make it a little bit more efficient, a little bit better and easier.
Okay, I think that makes sense. And with that, that's how we, you know, wrap up today's discussion, which has been a really great one. Just talking to Heath about, you know, his business, that is Braintree, understanding what's happening in the world of, you know, software implementation. He was just giving us a view, you know, of how 10 years ago, they were primarily a projects only business model. But now they've now gotten to a place where I believe, you know, you said it was either 60-40 or it's 55-45, you know, somewhere there in terms of your project-based work versus, you know, the cloud services. And, you know, that has helped to smoothen out their revenues because that's more annuity type, you know, business that's there. It's also a company that has come from having about 20 people, you know, to having, you know, 160-man team, you know, over that 10-year period and going from 30 million rand to half a billion. And one of the big things that Heath was saying is that relationships have been a big driver, you know, of the business along the way. Technical capability is one thing, but relationships, you know, are the thing that's actually going to help to carry you through and actually unlock, you know, some of those doors and some of those opportunities. And it feeds also into, you know, how he thinks about hiring in the savage talent landscape that we spoke about earlier on. He does say that, you know, they are doing their bit to try and increase talent, you know, from sort of grassroots level, you know, so that they can breed the talent, and which helps to mitigate some of the risk of going out and competing, you know, at some of the higher levels. But at that, in that, he does say that what he cares about more is the attitude as opposed to the aptitude, you know, of a, you know, particular candidate, because, you know, it's about willingness, it's about the person, because, you know, lots of people can have the same set of skills and talents, but, you know, your attitude and your willingness to actually go out to a client and actually add value is quite something else. Then we also spoke, I think in the end there, just talking about digital transformation, what's happening in the country, you know, some of the attitudes of balancing some of the technologies that are at the cutting edge versus a lot of the legacy systems that a lot of businesses are still saddled with right now. And, you know, he's just giving us an understanding to say that those are some of the things that, you know, the likes of Braintree have to manage, you know, over time, because it may lead to opportunity, but in the name of, you know, relationships, you can't forego, you know, some of those things. And then ending off talking about AI, its impact on, you know, their business. And I think the one of the best things he said is that, you know, where companies are trying to reduce headcount using AI, it's probably, you know, not the best place, you know, to have, you know, have as a mindset. But he did say that for a lot of companies, AI has been a tool that is being used to drive up efficiencies. So that's been it. We were in conversation with Heath Huxtable. He is the managing director over at Braintree. Heath, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Midiwe. Again, thanks very much for the opportunity. It's been great.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.